It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
Just a short time ago, Roy Moore tells me he welcomes the president's support as he moves into this general election. And the president did tweet out that he hopes Roy Moore wins. The president also called Roy Moore just a short time ago. Moore told me that he was in the crowd with supporters. It was very loud, as you can imagine, so he couldn't quite hear the phone call, but he hopes to reconnect with the president very soon. Now, not only did the president get involved in this race, but so did Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell. His super PAC spent millions of dollars in Alabama in support of Luther Strange. Well, Roy Moore tells me he hopes this sends a message to the establishment in Washington. Their wall has been cracked and will now fall. As I mentioned, a lot of ads in Alabama. This has been a nasty campaign with a flood of negative ads against Moore. I asked Moore about moving the Republican Party forward. Here's what he had to say.
How do you plan to reunite the Republican Party now with President Trump and yourself?
With the truth. You can unite anything with the truth. When you speak the truth, it will draw people. When we speak the truth about our country, it's not Democrat or Republican. It's not black or white. It's the truth about our country. I'm proud of our country. I'm proud of what we've done over the years to eliminate many of the problems we've had. And I think we need to look at the source of those solutions was found in our framed government, where rights come from God and government's role is to secure those rights for us.
Wow, that's an amazing victory last night. Can you imagine when we had Justice Moore on a few days ago, and I mentioned the amount of money that was spent by Mitch McConnell PAC together with Karl Rove, they spent $30 million in Alabama to try to defeat Judge Moore. I just think that figure is shocking, and let me amend the percentages. What I'm reading this morning is that Judge Moore won by 11.6 points. At least that was with almost 90% of the districts counted, precincts counted. 11.6 points, that's a very big win. When you consider that President Trump went down there to stump for Luther Strange, so did Mike Pence, Vice President, trying to persuade Alabama voters that Luther Strange, who had been appointed by the former governor, Robert Bentley, and who was supported so by $30 million by the establishment in Washington. That's just stunning. And so it was a big win for Roy Moore, no question about it. And one thing we did not talk about when we were talking with him the last few times, you know, the last time he was removed from Chief Justice role. This was the issue. Alabama had passed its own amended their constitution about marriage, that marriage was between one man and one woman. So when the Supreme Court made their decision, immediately there was confusion. In the states that had passed amendments, you know, which law is greater? And which trumps which? Is it the Supreme Court? Can the Supreme Court say, based on states' rights, that states cannot dictate for themselves on this issue? So it was a legitimate discussion, but Justice Moore did not dictate that the Supreme Court be ignored. What he said was, in the interim, while this is being decided, that the lower court judges must adhere to Alabama law, to the duly passed law in Alabama. They must adhere to that in this interim process. And for that, he was removed from office. And what you might not even know was, in addition to that, they took away his pension, his salary. It was just amazing. There are more details to that, which maybe at some point we can get into later. So this win for him, this support by the people of Alabama, as much as they love the president, they were determined that justice should be done, and because they know the character of Judge Moore, they wanted him to represent them in Washington. So it is really quite a story. Judge Moore gave his speech last night, and I thought you might want to hear part of it. Here it is.
There's one you don't see up here. Let me just tell you, he's done more for my campaign than anybody, and that's Almighty God. I want everybody to understand that when I talk about God in this campaign, I've never prayed to win this campaign. I've only prayed that God's will be done. Because I think you can sometimes win on your own, and it's not a good thing. And sometimes you can lose, and it's the best thing. But the best thing we can do is put it in the hands of the Almighty. For one day every valley shall be exalted, and every mountain or hill shall be made low, and the crooked shall be made straight, and the rough places plain, and the glory of the Lord shall be revealed, and all flesh shall see it together. For the mouth of the Lord has spoken it. The voice said, cry, and he said, what shall I cry? All flesh is grass, and all the goodness thereof is the flower of the field. The grass withereth, the flower fadeth, because the Spirit of the Lord bloweth upon it. Surely the people is grass. The grass withereth, the flower fadeth, but the word of our God shall stand forever. Amen. Together we can make America great. We can support the president. Don't let anybody in the press think that because he supported my opponent that I do not support him and support his agenda. As long as it's constitutional, as long as it advances our society, our culture, our country, I will be supportive as long as it's constitutional. But we have to return the knowledge of God and the Constitution of the United States to the United States Congress.
All right, so that was just a portion of Judge Moore's speech. You know, I've heard him speak. I've known him for years. I got acquainted with him when I was president of CWA, and every time I heard him speak, he has great long passages of scripture committed to memory and the Constitution committed to memory, the founders' quotes. It's always an inspiration to hear him speak. And I think probably the reason why those of us that are serious followers of the Lord Jesus, our hearts beat a little fast is because we have seen him not just talk. Because it's easy to talk about trusting God. It's easy to say you're a Christian. It's easy to say you're pro-life. It's easy to say a lot of things when you're in public life. But it is not easy to lay your life, your livelihood, and your family on the line as often as he has. And the people of Alabama who know him best have made a choice. Now, he's going to be, he has a Democratic opponent. I've forgotten his name, actually. I thought I had it right here. But I think the next final election is going to be in December. And this is, again, Jeff Sessions' seat that he vacated when he went to be attorney general. So Alabama is very unlikely, in spite of what Luther Strange said and what others said, that Justice Moore couldn't win in the general. Alabama has not elected a Democrat to the Senate for a long time. And so it's a red state, for heaven's sake. And so that was really a kind of a silly argument. I think whoever the nominee, whether it was Luther Strange or Judge Moore, would win the election. Anyway, Doug Jones is the Democratic opponent. Thanks, guys back at Tupelo for telling me that. Yeah, so Doug Jones is the Democratic opponent. So I think he has an uphill battle because of the nature of the state itself. All right, so there are repercussions, you know, from this. In fact, yesterday, remember that Senator Bob Corker, who was the chairman of the Foreign Relations Committee, was allegedly one of the persons that, let's say persuaded, strong-armed, I'm not sure what you want to say, went to visit the president and talked him into supporting Luther Strange. And then, ironically, I believe I touched on this last week, that Bob Corker, it turns out, had made some very lucrative financial arrangements via Luther Strange, who was the attorney general in Alabama. One in particular I remember was like a shopping center that is just made a ton of money for Bob Corker. So, you know, I guess he is friends with Luther Strange and would like Luther Strange to have won that race. I also understand that He is looking, Bob Corker is looking at the landscape in Tennessee and seeing that people are not happy with him. People are very upset with his criticisms of Donald Trump, very upset with his leader. Look, he is the guy, he is the senator that pushed the Corker-Cardin deal, which was the one that gave Iran all that money and pushed the Iran deal mercilessly. And from all accounts, and we'll get into this a little bit more tomorrow, Ken Cuccinelli is going to join me. Senator Corker there was a financial gain for Senator Corker in that Iran deal. That's just absolutely reprehensible. And I saw him myself lie on television repeatedly about what this Iran deal would do. But yet he gives this, Mike Emanuel does the report last night, and Senator Corker, of course, makes it sound like he's a man of the people. I don't think so. But let's hear what Mike Emanuel had to say about what Senator Corker is now going to do. Here it is.
The Senate Foreign Relations Chairman Bob Corker of Tennessee has announced he will not seek a third term. He will retire after next year. We caught up with Corker late today.
Serving the Senate for two terms is what has allowed me to be the independent voice that sometimes says things that shock you guys. I just felt like I was moving into sort of a career politician mode, thinking about third term, and just wasn't me.
A number of Republican sources say they are not terribly surprised by this announcement, saying they felt like Corker has had enough here on Capitol Hill.
Yes, yeah, so, you know, he's, well, you know, that's not the way I see it at all, I have to tell you. I think he's done some terrible things. He has pushed some terrible policies. And one could argue, I don't know what his net worth is, maybe we'll get into that, but I think it's pretty high. He's done very well as a senator. And so now, because he has lofty motives, according to him, he's stepping down. But according to what I'm reading, he would have been in trouble in this next re-election. And it looks like there may be, certainly the senators seem worried about it. There may be a domino effect after this Alabama race. Some of them are, you know, putting their finger up to the wind and seeing that people are not happy about what these Republican senators have done. The core of men you see standing around Mitch McConnell every time he gets to a microphone, I think they're in trouble. Now, they're not all up for re-election. And who knows, people are fickle. Voters are fickle. Who knows what's going to happen in the next cycle. But coming up in 2018, I think there are 16 Republican seats in play. So and some of them are conservatives already. Ted Cruz is coming up. And we'll get we will get into this tomorrow. Ken Cuccinelli will join me, and we're going to talk about what all of this means. But it could actually mean that the people may be able to take back their Senate. And elect senators, enough of them, that will actually do the people's business. But right now, of course, the Senate is busy doing other things. We're going to talk about one of their initiatives in just a second with our next guest. But there's a couple of things about the NFL I wanted to get to. There's a ton of things, but I'll try to give just a few of them here. In a national survey that just came out yesterday or this morning, and yesterday it happens to be, Americans who were polled say, based from this question last week, Donald Trump said NFL players should stand and be respectful during the national anthem. Do you think NFL players should stand and be respectful during the national anthem? Yes, 64%. No, 25%. Unsure, 11%. On Sunday, a number of NFL players knelt during the national anthem in protest of Donald Trump's statements, including players from your favorite team. Does this make you more likely or less likely to watch your favorite team's games in the future? More likely, 30%. Less likely, 50%. No difference, 20%. And there's a lot more to that survey. By the way, the Nielsen ratings are out. Football ratings are off 11% this year. And there's just so much more to say about that. And if I get a chance in the last segment, I'll come back to it. Because it looks like DirecTV is offering refunds for people who bought the NFL package. Budweiser has made a statement that they do not approve of athletes not standing, and they're taking some moves to do something about it. So, well, there you go. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
American Family Radio, impacting lives.
My name is Beth. I live in a small town. I'm a retired school teacher, and your radio show I can get out and ride around and just turn that radio station on, and it just comforts me. It gives me peace. It gives me hope, because I know the Lord is in control. And when I'm lonely, when I'm afraid, when I have any problems, I just turn it over to Him. There are many, many women like me, because they've become widows, but they still have a chance, because God is in control, and you help us to realize that. Thank you.
Ensure that we impact even more lives by partnering with us during our 3-day Share-a-thon starting October 17th. Listener-supported, American Family Radio, for your family.
In Bhutan, where nearly 78% of the population is Buddhist, can the gospel of Jesus Christ make inroads? Hi, I'm Don Shank, director of the Tide Global Radio Ministry, and this is today's Global Update. Bhutan is relatively closed to the gospel and is one of the least evangelized nations. But in 2012, the Tide Ministry began Christian broadcasting in Dzongka, the official language of Bhutan. Please join us in praising God for pastors that are helping to transition curious listeners into committed believers who stand firm in their faith. A pastor who works with the Tide Partner Ministry in Bhutan recently shared this about a new believer. The listener and his wife are Buddhist, but listen to our radio program. Slowly they want to believe in the Lord and are interested in taking baptism. Please uphold them in your prayers. To find out how you can get involved in the Tide radio work and help us share the gospel in Bhutan and around the globe, visit thetide.org. That's thetide.org.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next.
Truett McConnell University.
My name is Peter Koh, and I'm a business major, and this is my junior year at the college. What I love about the athletics here at Truett McConnell University is the coaches and their side of trying to teach sports from a biblical mindset with sportsmanship involved, and it really changes the way that you pursue the game, not just passionately doing it for other people, but also for yourself and to glorify God in that, which is completely different from most other schools.
Are you called? Visit truett.edu today.
Emotions are running high across the Fruited Plain as the National Football League doubles down on its national anthem protest. Fans are burning jerseys and hats. Local businesses are pulling players from advertising campaigns. And a concession worker for the Buffalo Bills turned in his notice after players took a knee. President Trump doubled down on his outrage Tuesday.
Many people have died. Many, many people. Many people are so horribly injured. I was at Walter Reed Hospital recently, and I saw so many great young people, and they're missing legs and they're missing arms, and they've been so badly injured. And they were fighting for our country. They were fighting for our flag. They were fighting for our national anthem. And for people to disrespect that by kneeling during the playing of our national anthem, I think is disgraceful.
Remember when the NFL used to play with the pigskin and not a political football? I miss those days. I'm Todd Starnes.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
The administration issued another travel ban, its third in 8 months.
The travel ban, the tougher, the better.
The latest restrictions are different for each country and depend on how much that government coordinates with the U.S. They take effect October 18th. New to the list, Venezuela. In Asia, North Korea. And in Africa, Chad. Still on the list, Iran, Libya, Syria, Yemen, and Somalia. Dropped, Sudan. The administration says Sudan met new security requirements. The order also identifies Iraq's security as inadequate, though the administration is leaving it off the updated list. The order recommends additional screening for Iraqis trying to travel to the U.S.
We will continue to make sure that anyone coming into the United States of America does not represent a threat to our communities and our families.
This updated executive order has no expiration. Its restrictions are indefinite. Officials say countries can work with the U.S. to improve their security, and the government will consider removing them from the list. A State Department official tells Fox News some of the countries are coordinating with the U.S. Others are unlikely to.
This is an inhuman, wrong, irrational, and irrelevant action which is being done by the U.S. administration and the new president.
The Supreme Court was scheduled to hear oral arguments next month on the administration's previous travel ban. With this modified order, the court has removed those arguments from its calendar. The justices want both sides to weigh in by October 5th about the next steps in the case. The American Civil Liberties Union sued the administration over the previous ban. The latest version includes countries without Muslim majorities, though the ACLU says, quote, this is an apparent effort to paper over the original sin of the Muslim ban. Federal judges blocked elements of the first two versions, and as this now returns to the courts, justices may ultimately decide the president's authority on national security and immigration.
You know, when I listened to that report, that was Rich Edson from Fox, it just reminds me of the confusion. I mean, who would have ever thought that we would have to be fighting over whether we should let people into this country who might pose a threat? Who would ever argue about that? And who would ever think that it would go to our courts and they would overturn the president's ruling, that they would be more concerned about people who potentially want to immigrate or come to this country than about the safety of American citizens? It reminds me of the confusion in the NFL now. We have become a nation of people who cannot think clearly. Dan Stein is my guest. Dan is the president of the Federation for American Immigration Reform. You hear Dan with me at least once a year when we go to Radio Row in D.C., but I always think, every time I interview him, that we don't talk often enough. And so because Federation for American Immigration Reform is all over this, they're a great think tank, a reliable think tank. And because Dan thinks clearly on this issue, I've asked him to join me this morning. Good morning, Dan.
Sandy, so great to talk to you.
It's great to talk to you, too. You know, this is the third time the president has issued an executive order. They've had to revise the guidelines because lower courts, who really should have no jurisdiction, are stopping the president from implementing these guidelines. Dan, let's go back to actually pull back to like square one. From your perspective and your knowledge, do you think these judges actually have any right to do what they're doing?
It's a big problem that in the last 15 years, we have federal judges who've been put on the bench who truly believe they have the right to substitute their personal judgment, their political views, for both the law and age-old precedent. There's been a growing tendency to appoint judges who are trying to see things perhaps through the lens of a civil rights legal rubric, equal protection, and try to apply that to what are really decisions that are related to sovereignty, the attributes of the president as commander-in-chief, in his authority to protect our borders, our national security. If you take a look at the ACLU arguments against what is really an effort to try to ensure security with proper vetting, by trying to make this somehow an equal protection Fifth Amendment Muslim ban argument, they're trying to apply these theories to something where it's just not appropriate. I mean, the president really has the right under the law. And this is an authority he's been given Congress under its plenary authority to suspend the admission of any alien class of aliens that he says he or she deems is appropriate for national security or the national interest. And these are age-old historic powers that have been viewed by the judiciary as part of respecting the authority of the executive branch, you know, to engage in foreign affairs, international relations, military authorities, commander-in-chief, and control and security of our borders. The next thing you know, the argument of the ACLU sounds like they would say, well, you know, if we drop bombs on ISIS operatives, that we're supposed to also drop them on Tel Aviv and Jews there because we're discriminating against Muslims by attacking ISIS. It's a ludicrous thing, and yet this is something that we've been very concerned about at FAIR for like 20 years, that the minute you start appointing judges to particularly the Supreme Court who fundamentally believe that these equal protection arguments from the civil rights rubric apply in areas like immigration or international relations and those kinds of things, it gives the judiciary a license to overturn our legislature and become a super legislature that just ignores the will of the people in the fundamental essence of how we operate as a nation overseas.
Well, and also just the ludicrousness of saying, and which is what they're doing repeatedly in other issues too, that foreign persons have constitutional rights. Even prospective people who might want to come here have equal protection under, that's really not, it applies to American citizens, not to the entire world. But Dan, I think, I don't know if you would agree with this, but I think the Supreme Court has been a disappointment, a huge disappointment already. They could have done worse, yes, but it's really up to them to sort this out, and they really have kind of deferred or delayed any kind of a firm decision about the president's right to make these orders. Do you agree with that?
They've been dragging their feet because this really truly has been an historic high level of authority of the president. The courts aren't really competent to be second guessing these kinds of sensitive national security judgments. And do we really want the judiciary to be deciding who can come into this country and who can't, and striking down immigration laws that Congress has set, essentially, in deciding who can come and who can't? These are areas that just aren't appropriate for the... the answer is yes, it's disappointing. And the other big disappointment here is that among the new list of people, their candidates that are on the travel ban, Trump did not include the Southern Poverty Law Center in its list of, banned countries. I'm just kidding.
a certain area of Montgomery, Alabama, or whatever, wherever they are. Yeah. No, that's good. That was disappointing. But Dan, from your perspective, then I want to move on to some other topics because there's so much to talk about with what's going on with this. Is this third order, this third attempt, is it too watered down, or do you think it has some teeth to it?
No, it has the advantage of having the incentives, as your report pointed out, of trying to bring countries to heel, because ultimately what this is about is simple. If you're talking about a country that doesn't have a document structure in place, where we're not able to verify the actual or true identity of the person, they're on a proper criminal background check, when they don't have the centralized governmental authorities that give the United States comfort that we actually know who the people are who are demanding or requesting visas, that we simply suspend the issuance until they get in line and meet modern-day security standards. I mean, the American people have a right to know who's coming into the country and who don't, and Trump is refining the process to try to bring about the stated objective, which was, not to be admitting people without any real knowledge of who they are. And this is an improvement. This is, he's getting closer to where he needs to go. We don't feel that he's backing off the principle. And one of the great things about the Trump administration is that they're really not backing off their initiatives. They're zealously defending their prerogatives in court. This is extremely important. They're not backing off. They haven't cut any craven deals with the ACLU to settle cases in a way that would be damaging to the president's, the president's authority. He's standing firm. And the defense of what he's doing here as a practical matter is very important. And we do believe that eventually there will be a pretty strong statement from the Supreme Court pushing back on these lower court judges who are way out of line, particularly in Hawaii. I mean, the idea that anybody in the United States, any university, can sue the federal government demanding that a foreign student who might want to come in, be admitted and challenge a policy that excluded that potential foreign student opens the floodgate to limitless litigation of millions of lawsuits filed. This has historically not been the kind of case that a federal court would ever hear. I mean, we know, Sandy, because FAERS litigated the immigration issue for 35, 40, almost 40 years now, and every time, most of the time when we've gone to federal court and challenged, for example, when Janet Reno, the Attorney General under Clinton, was admitting or paroling aliens without legal authority, just like Obama was doing, historically the courts were saying, the generalized injury that you're claiming is too vague, and therefore we're not going to provide what they call legal standing, we won't hear the case. So what this Hawaii judge was doing was a radical departure in the law of standing and really would open up the floodgates in a way that there's no way the Supreme Court could ever tolerate.
Yeah. All right. Well, we'll hear more about that, of course, because we'll be all looking to see what the Supreme Court's going to do about this. Now, as I understand it, changing the subject slightly, as of today, there are the prototypes, like the bids have gone out to build a border wall. And different companies have bid, and I think four of them have won a contract to sort of build their prototype. I guess it's going to be built on the border, and the idea is to choose for the government to look to see which wall, which type, which prototype is most effective. But that begins today, as I understand it. What are your thoughts about that, Dan?
Well, the prototype is important, and the question of where to put the prototypes and where to test them and what type of wall would work in what area of the locale is going to be pretty complicated. I mean, the Trump wall is ultimately about political resolve to put whatever structures and resources you need to stop illegal crossings, you know, entries without inspection across our southern border. And so in some areas, as Trump has said, and we've always said from the beginning, you know, the wall is a surrogate for a basket of ideas. And some areas, a concrete wall or a berm or what they used to call a ha-ha, which is like a sunken fence, which then rises up from a depressed area to have a wall, and then it's backfilled on the U.S. side so the Border Patrol can look down, can work in some places. In some places, you need a double fencing. In some places, you know, where they can drive through. And there's, of course, there are direct on-the-border structures, and then there are recessed structures that can provide staged control. And there are so many different great strategies. They need to get out there and do a prototype. But the reality is the only reason the Democrats are standing in the way, because in 2009 they voted for structures and funding for fences and all that, is that they know that Trump is known as a builder, a guy who delivers, right? That's his big cred. His street cred is he gets the job done. If he says there's going to be a tower built 100 stories tall in New York City, well, Trump Tower appears. So if he says we're going to build a wall, well, dadgum it, we're going to get a wall. So the Democrats want to embarrass him, and they're holding back absurdly, right, these relatively small amounts of federal money to get the wall started. Anyway, the prototypes all look very interesting to us, and we're anxious to see what they select.
Dan, just a programming thing here. Can you stay with me 5 minutes longer than you had anticipated?
Sure, because okay. They didn't tell me when we were done.
Oh, all right. The reason I ask is we're almost out of time here, and I have not even asked you about this new move in the Senate and in the House to actually give amnesty to the, 800,000 so-called dreamers, and I'm not sure what else, but they are, like, excited. They are sort of salivating at the thought, meaning the leadership, the Republican leadership, sort of salivating at the thought of being able to sort of get amnesty through, and they're trying to work with the White House to do that. So I'm eager to know what you
I'm
think
happy
about
to give one of the most influential talk hosts in America all the time she needs, Sandy.
Now, Dan, that's a flattery might get you someplace, at least get you 5 minutes more. But anyway,
sure.
But Dan, what do you think about that? I mean, we've fought this so many times. It just really defies, I just am stunned, really, that they are now trying to jump in and take advantage of this confusion over DACA and the understanding of it to try to pass amnesty yet once again.
There are many things we don't know about immigration policy, but there is one thing we do know. And you ask your listeners, how many DACA beneficiaries voted for Donald Trump? The answer is zero. How many DACA beneficiaries were working with the Clinton campaign and Get Out the Vote campaign? The answer is thousands, some of them coordinated through the Mexican consulate. The DACA program was illegal. The people here are illegal aliens. The fact that they came here as minors doesn't change the fact that they're being asked to benefit by virtue of the fact that they or their parents broke the law. And there's no particular reason why this particular class deserves any different consideration than anyone else here illegally, except for the fact that Dick Durbin and the Democrats have been using this group as a political football since about 2004 because they believe they're particularly sympathetic. But there is simply no reason why Trump should be even considering the DACA amnesty program. First of all, because everybody who gets a green card and eventual citizenship will petition at least three and probably as many as seven or eight relatives. They're trying to change the DACA beneficiaries into anchor babies, right? So they can petition parents. And the beneficiaries themselves made it clear with Nancy Pelosi, they're not going to be satisfied. They want their parents. They want their uncles, their aunts, their cousins. They want them all. They want the whole enchilada, as they say.
You guys hold the break, for 5 minutes. Please hold the break, guys.
Sure.
I know you and I are doing that, but the guys didn't get the message back in Tupelo. So sorry to interrupt you, Dan.
This is one of those things where it's very clear the Democrats are using this group as a political football. And when you look at the way Durbin and others are negotiating with Trump you know, Schumer and Pelosi. You can see that the Democrats are not even making a good faith effort to meet Trump halfway. Why? Because the entire agenda has nothing to do with amnesty. They're trying to create a rift between the Hispanic voting bloc and the Republican Party. That's all this is about.
But Dan, on the other side of this is President Trump, who, in spite of what people say, you and I both have seen and know that he has this soft side. He does. He has a compassionate soft side when it comes to natural disasters, when it comes. And so he said right up front, even when he was campaigning, he expressed that he, oh, these dreamers, he had a soft, the young people who've come, you know, that's the line. This is the way the story goes, that these kids came out of no fault of their own. This is the only country they've known. They maybe don't even speak anything but English. And how could we possibly deport them or send them out of country? And I would like to know what your response would be to that logic.
Well, many of them come from industrialized countries. Remember that all of them are citizens of these countries where they can go back and take advantage of all of what they've learned in U.S. public schools and in colleges and put it to work to help build their countries. And, yeah, there may be some transitional phase for a little bit, but they also have relatives back in these countries, and they'll eventually get on and do just fine. The question is, who gets to decide where to draw that line? I mean, some of the so-called DACA beneficiaries are not dreamers. You know, we're all dreamers. My kids are dreamers. My grandkids are dreamers. Let's be honest. It's all in the language. No, they broke the law. And they jumped the line in front of millions of people who respected the law, and they're asking that to be rewarded for having done something when all these people who played by the rules, including foreign students and H-1Bs, these non-immigrants who've been here playing by the rules and filled out the paperwork, they don't get the amnesty, the green card status. So you're punishing the people who played by the rules, Sandy. So there are fundamental ethical and moral issues involved here. Yes. Obviously, you can find many sympathetic people, valedictorians and people who've done well, SEAL Team 6, and as Mark Stein likes to say. But by the same token, there are others who've gotten in trouble with gangs and drugs and all kinds of violence, and many of them have dropped out of high school. The basic question here is, doesn't Trump first owe the people who put him in office, right? I mean, the people who voted for Trump and delivered him the election in those blue states, the internal tracking polling shows that when they voted for Obama in 2012, they moved to Trump in 2016 primarily on the immigration issue. We know from what happened to Rick Perry, Jeb Bush, and others, that if Trump had strongly campaigned on a DACA amnesty, Ted Cruz probably would have gotten the nomination, not Donald Trump. And let's be honest about it. We all have his marker. He owes us a good faith effort to get from the Democrats major, major concessions toward his campaign promises in the immigration realm before he considers even any sort of DACA amnesty, especially something like the RAISE Act that Senators Cotton and Perdue have introduced that would cut chain migration. Because if every time we bring in an immigrant, they get a right to bring in an unlimited number of relatives, the math doesn't work. And we have an unworkable program. And right now, Donald Trump promised us he was going to eliminate this nepotistic chain migration system and say, look, you want to come, you can bring your spouse, your unmarried minor children, but you're not going to be the first one in of 50 relatives. It just can't work that way.
You know, I was just reading an article by Daniel Horowitz that just came out this morning, and
oh,
he was
a brilliant guy.
Yes, he is, and he was just recalling some specifics. I had not even heard about this. There's another murder in San Francisco by two illegal immigrants who had been arrested and released by the police. One was accused of murder prior to this, released, and now they have killed another person in San Francisco. And then also Daniel points out that of these dreamers that came across the border, so-called dreamers, 84% of family units from Central America did not go to the immigration hearing and they disappeared. And also 90% failed to show up for their hearings among illegal aliens who've crossed in recent years. So we don't know who's here. And now the Congress is pushing for blanket amnesty. It's just wrong. And I think your words are right, Dan. We have to hold the president's feet to the fire on this too, which I'm sure that you are doing. Speaking of hold their feet to the fire, your annual radio row. Federation for American Immigration Reform, President Dan Stein. Dan, thanks for joining us this morning.
Always a pleasure, Sandy.
Okay, talk to you soon. All right, you too. All right, Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
for able men from all the people, men who fear God and are trustworthy. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Corner. During Senate confirmation hearings, Senators Dick Durbin and Dianne Feinstein probed Amy Barrett, President Trump's nominee to fill a vacancy on the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals, about her Catholic faith. Senator Feinstein chided Professor Barrett, proclaiming, "The dogma lives loudly within you, and that's of concern." Of course, Feinstein was really concerned about the regressive Holy Grail, Roe versus Wade, ending up in the dustbin of history. First, it was Russell Vogt. Now, it's Amy Coney Barrett. The Senate has no regard for the Constitution.
Listen to the Hamilton Corner, weekdays from 5 to 6 p.m. Central on AFR. For more from Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
Christian apologist Frank Turek.
75% of young people walk away from the church once they leave the home, and one of the major reasons is they don't know why Christianity's true.
Join Frank Turek and others at Southern Evangelical Seminary's National Conference on Christian Apologetics, October 13th and 14th in Charlotte, North Carolina. Witness live debate and the premiere of American Family Association's documentary, The God Who Speaks. Online registration ends October 10th. Visit ses.edu for details.
To sharpen the faith of Christians and to share the good news of Jesus Christ with those who don't know Him. That is the mission of the Christian Worldview Radio program. This is host David Wheaton inviting you to join us this Saturday morning at 9 Eastern, 8 Central, to pursue that mission as we discuss a compelling topic from a decidedly biblical perspective. The Christian Worldview, Saturday mornings at 9 Eastern, 8 Central, right here on AFR Talk.
I feel so hopeless.
Is there any hope?
I just feel like there's no hope at all.
Is there any hope?
Get hope.
Nothing causes me to lose hope like disappointment.
That's TWR President Lauren Libby.
Something I'd been counting on didn't happen. A relationship goes south. Trust lost in someone or something I had counted upon. When disappointment strikes, my frame of reference gets very, very short. Everything focuses on the short-term disappointment. What's the cure? Realizing that better things are ahead. Jesus said He would never fail or forsake us. He promised to be with us no matter the circumstances. He has our best interests at heart. And He always offers a brighter long-term future. Disappointed? Lost hope? Tell Jesus and see your hope quotient rise.
Need more hope? We have resources waiting for you, including a free devotional. You'll find them at GetHopeRadio.com. That's GetHopeRadio.com.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. The transformation of Donald Trump from candidate to president is ominously evident in his unraveling policy on characterizing the enemy we face and keeping them out of the country. With the latest revision to his restrictions on immigration, the so-called travel ban, the threat posed by what he called radical Islamic terrorism has been largely airbrushed out of his administration's lexicon and directives. What is particularly concerning is the absence from the new travel restrictions of an ideological screen designed to exclude those who would come here to promote Sharia supremacism. That totalitarian Islamic doctrine is fundamentally incompatible with our Constitution, and its adherents are obliged to engage in one form of jihad or another to impose it worldwide. Without such a screen, we are unlikely to contain the jihadists we face, let alone prevent them from waging holy war here. This is Frank Affney.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Fred and Cindy Warmbier would finally see their son Otto return from a North Korean prison after more than a year in captivity.
We weren't prepared for what we had. And then when we saw Otto the way he was, we loved him, we're proud of him, but no mother, no parent should ever have gone through what we went through.
Otto had a shaved head. He had a feeding tube coming out of his nose. He was staring blankly into space, jerking violently. He was blind. He was deaf.
Otto died less than a week later, on June 19th. North Korea says Warmbier's death is a mystery,
and claims it is the victim.
But North Korea is not a victim. They're terrorists. They kidnapped Otto. They tortured him. They intentionally injured him.
He then called on the U.S. government to list North Korea as a state sponsor of terrorism. That would immediately impose even more restrictions on North Korea.
This is something that we constantly assess. I know the secretary has certainly looked at that, had looked at that certainly in the past when it came to Otto Warmbier. I don't know if that's something that we're looking at today.
The administration today announced additional sanctions, targeting 8 North Korean banks and 26 people linked to North Korea's finance network. The president also thanked Chinese President Xi Jinping.
I applaud China's latest action to restrict its trade with North Korea. And in particular, I applaud China for breaking off all banking relationships with North Korea, something that people would have thought unthinkable even 2 months ago.
President Trump and North Korea resumed their threat exchanges. Administration officials claim the U.S. can easily overwhelm North Korean capabilities if attacked. Those say they want to avoid war.
We're going to continue to pursue our diplomatic efforts and hope that that's the way we'll solve this.
You know, we've been talking about the NFL so much that really the real dangers, I'm not sure. One's an internal danger and one's an external, and that's North Korea. And I read to you yesterday a portion of an article by J. Christian Adams, which we put on our Facebook page, about Winston Churchill recalling a time prior to World War II about a group of young men in Oxford who made a public statement. They were part of this club, influential club, and they said that we will not fight for king and country. We will not fight. And so Churchill talked about how even though it was greeted in England with sort of a yawn and some laughter, the enemies heard that. The Germans heard that. The Japanese heard that. They reckoned that the British were weak and flabby. They had grown rich and content in their conquests, and that they would never fight. And so I just think this is a danger that we face right now, too. North Korea is a real threat to us. And even though we don't talk about it every day, it is a real and ever-present danger. Also was Iran. They are just waiting. Pakistan developing nuclear weapons. They are waiting for the right time. The Islamists of all stripes around the globe are waiting. And they are not weak like we have become. And they are not uncertain about their values, however we might disagree or oppose or abhor their values. They are united. They are one people. They have a national interest and a national passion, which is what we are beginning to lack. I want to go back to the NFL in a second, but Otto's parents, Otto Warmbier's parents, Cindy and Fred, were on Fox and Friends, and I asked Adam to pull just a couple of things that they said because it was so moving to me. Let's listen.
Otto was on the stretcher across in the plane, and he was jerking violently, making these inhuman sounds. Cindy and Greta ran off the plane. Austin and I walked over to Otto. Otto had a shaved head. He had a feeding tube coming out of his nose. He was staring blankly into space, jerking violently. He was blind. He was deaf. As we looked at him and tried to comfort him, it looked like someone had taken a pair of pliers and rearranged his bottom teeth.
Oh my gosh.
Within 2 days of Otto being home, his fever spiked to 104 degrees. He had a large scar on his right foot. North Korea is not a victim. They're terrorists.
They destroyed him.
They purposely and intentionally injured Otto.
As a parent, how do you get through that? How do you move on from this?
Well, you know, we weren't prepared for what we had. And then when we saw Otto the way he was, we loved him, we're proud of him, but no mother, no parent should ever have gone through what we went through. And the fact that Otto was alone all that time with no one to comfort him is inexcusable. And whatever happened, I mean, why would you do this? Mm. This is not...
Why do you think they sent him home?
He was going to die.
How can you question what a terrorist country does?
True.
They're
True.
Terrorists. This is what they do. They kidnapped Otto. They tortured him.
Tortured him.
Yeah.
For allegedly trying to steal a propaganda sign. He's 21
reason.
Years old, University of Virginia, one of the toughest schools to get into. He's a bright kid.
All right, so that was Otto's parents. And the reason, well, of course, it's moving for the obvious reasons, but also it's just a reminder, do we not understand that we have enemies who hate us? They do not lack for resolve. They are eager to destroy us. And young men like Otto, who would be our soldiers. The young men of the NFL, who would be our soldiers. Are they prepared to fight for America? Are they prepared to stand and make the sacrifices necessary? Because if they are not, we will be rolled over. You can have all the military equipment possible. The history is replete with stories of armies that were masterfully trained and wonderfully equipped for their moment in time, who lost to people who really believed in their cause. And so I have to say that this whole thing about the NFL has such broader implications. The president, I'm not going to stop and play that because we're running out of time. The president made an impassioned plea. He said, when I saw these soldiers injured, wounded, losing arms and legs, he'd just been to the hospital, and he said, he couldn't stand to see the NFL players taking the knee during the national anthem, having seen what he just saw. And yet you have a San Antonio Spurs coach saying, our country is an embarrassment to the world. He said, people have to be made to feel uncomfortable. Obviously, race is the elephant in the room, and we understand that. Unless it is talked about constantly, it's not going to get better. Because you were born white, you have advantages. Many people can't look at it. It's too difficult. Ben Shapiro writes in response to that. He says, you know, polls show consistently race relations were better before President Obama took office. By elevating racial discourse back to the center of our national consciousness, we reopened wounds that had been healing. And the notion that being born white in the United States represents an unspoken privilege is unsupported by data. If that were the case, Asian Americans would not be the highest earning group in the U.S. And if that were the case, single white mothers would be better off than married black parents. They aren't. If that were the case, we would expect to see white life expectancy continuously rising rather than falling again. Those are Ben Shapiro's comments. Huffington Post says the absence of white athletes kneeling for the anthem Sunday was a particularly illustrative moment in white privilege. See, for white athletes, the anthem and American flag do represent freedom, liberty, and whatever other amorphous American values one might ascribe to these symbols. So from their view, kneeling would be disrespectful to the privileges a white supremacist nation affords them. Now, I'm not going to spend much time with the most obvious counter, but it's worth stating. In the fairy tale we Americans tell ourselves, where soldiers fight wars for freedom and not imperial conquests, the story says they're fighting for someone's right to protest, not the opposite. So using the troops as a cudgel against protest wholly misunderstands even our own national fairy tales. The reason I read that to you is because that is the stuff that our kids are learning in colleges and universities and even in high schools and grade schools. That's why they don't understand. And when they think about the anthem, they don't know the story. They don't know the last verse that says, "Oh, thus be it ever when free men shall stand between their loved homes and the war's desolation, blessed with victory and peace. May the heaven-rescued land bless the power that hath made and preserved it a nation. Then conquer we must when our cause it is just, and this be our motto, in God is our trust. And the star-spangled banner forever shall wave o'er the land of the free and the home of the brave. That has nothing to do with race. Is it an American aspiration?"
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.